You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, and welcome to another fabulous episode of Dear Multi-Hyphenate. I'm your host, Michael Kushner, and I'm so excited that you're joining me for this episode featuring the amazing Adam DiCarlo. Exciting news, I am, of course, keeping this podcast, but I'm also starting another podcast as well called The After Party, and that is with my co-host and co-creator Isla Mel. Isla was on two episodes of Dear Multi-Hyphenate, actually, the one with Carol Burnett and the one with Derek McLean. So if you want to go ahead and listen to those episodes, they're really awesome. And we're starting this podcast that is about the before, middle, and after bringing a show to Broadway, or off-Broadway or the New York space. And it's really cool because, like, I love talking about that stuff, but I don't really get to talk about it too much under multi-hyphenate just because the theme is multi-hyphenating and, you know, that's, one, it's niche, but also very specific. But this is about the actual shows that we are seeing in New York, and these aren't very surfaced conversations, which is really cool. Not only are we talking about really, you know, specific and artistic themes, but we're also choosing people to go on these podcasts, this podcast, and have these conversations that are going to go there with us. We're not like, so are you having fun? It's more like, this theme seemed to bring out my internalized homophobia. And I'm referring to the play that I just saw called The 7 Year Disappear, starring Cynthia Nixon and Taylor Trench. And Cynthia Nixon is our first guest, which is really cool. We actually do talk a little bit about multi-hyphenating on that episode, but it was a great first recording. The episode is out today, which is exciting, alongside this new episode of Dear Multi-Hyphenate. So now I have two podcasts to go out at the same time, which, you know, I'm really happy about, because I'm really passionate about these podcasts. You know, podcasting's a lot of work, guys. It really is, but it's really joyful and really fun, and I'm glad I get to express that part of my creativity. And Isla is so wonderful. She's such a great co-host. We had such an amazing conversation with Cynthia, and I think it's gonna really be fun. If that first episode was key to anything what the podcast will become, then I think we have something special on our hands. And so yeah, you could download that wherever you listen to podcasts as well. And that's with Broadway Podcast Network too. So now you have two podcasts with BPN. I love it. Speaking of BPN, thanks to BPN for hosting Dear Multi-Hyphenate and allowing me to bring these conversations to you all. If you have any questions or anything like that, you know, I love to be kept in touch with. So you can email me at dearmultihyphenate@gmail.com. Follow me on social media at the Michael Kushner on Instagram or TikTok, or at dearmultihyphenate on Instagram. And what's really important is that you rate the episodes, comment, subscribe, review, tell your friends or family. It really, really is important. But I have some other things to announce soon, but not yet. But you know, it's mid-semester, and I'm teaching at NYU and the Norwalk Conservatory, and my semester is done at NYU. I do half the semester, and next year I'll be doing the full semester, I'm pretty sure. I hope so, because I'm new there, so they're, you know, making sure I'm still a good fit, and I don't blame them. But hopefully I'll be there for the full semester next in the fall. But at Norwalk Conservatory, I'm teaching theater business at both NYU and and Norwalk Conservatory, but we're building, I'm helping the students build their own small businesses, which has been really cool. And their midterms yesterday, they showed off in a presentation their progress to this date. And it's really cool. And it's really awesome to see these creatives and their ideas coming to fruition. But it got me thinking, I was like, why don't I teach this to, you know, people not in school? Why don't I teach how to create your own small business in the theater industry? And I might be doing that. So if you're interested in that, contact me and let me know, because I want to know if there's space for that, if people are interested in that. And in this workshop we would do, you would literally build your own small business and I would help you cultivate that. But yeah, let's get into the episode. Adam DiCarlo is an award-winning actor and filmmaker based in New York City. Adam was born and raised in Orange County, California, where he began studying acting at the Tony Award-winning Regional Theater South Coast Repertory. While living in New York City, he has appeared on several hit TV shows on Netflix, Fox, Hulu, HBO, and A&E, and has also performed in the theatrical scene in New York. He has also had leading roles in short films and a feature film. Adam has recently written and directed two award-winning short films, Lost and Found and Skeletons, which we talk about in the episode. Adam is a proud member of SAG-AFTRA and Actors Equity Association. We met while he interviewed me on his podcast before the break, and then became a headshot client of mine, and we totally hit it off. He is so wonderful. And again, enjoy the episode. Rate, comment, subscribe. Tell your friends, your family, and enjoy. Hi, Adam DiCarlo. How are you?
Hello, Michael. How are you?
I'm well. How did we meet? Were you on? Was I on your podcast first, or were you in the studio first?
I was in the studio first.
You were in the studio first. And how are your headshots yes. doing?
Great.
Okay, good. I've
booked two things from it.
Well, you know what? We'd love that. And you know what's so great about headshots for me? It's not even about the booking. I'm like, you do the booking. It's you. Although I've had a few clients tell me that their headshot literally helped them, like got them booked something. I'm like, oh, well, that's really cool. But what matters to me the most is that you're getting into the rooms that you want to be in, that you're getting into more rooms. So I'm so happy, obviously, that you booked, but the fact that you're even getting into rooms is like my goal as a headshot photographer. And that's really awesome.
Yep. I want to say just, you know, on social media, being friends with a ton of actors, you can see certain photographers like style and eye, and I want to say I just started really noticing your name over and over and over and over again, and so I started following you, and I really liked your eye and your style and your photos, and you know, it was just one of those times. It was like, yeah, I really need headshots, and I think for actors it is important to kind of keep in your back pocket a handful of photographers that you like. And if you start seeing headshots that you're like, you know, I don't need them right now, but maybe one down the line, you're not having to like ask people. You can already be following people that you really, really like, and then cross that bridge and have that conversation later. And I mean, you were kind of that for me. So when it came time to do headshots, I was like, I think I'm going to go with Michael. And I had come up with a bunch of reference shots of like a kind of style and lighting and color palette that I wanted. And you were like, done. Yeah, I do that. Great.
Yeah.
I was like, cool. This is kind of what I'm shooting for. This is what I want them to look like. This kind of the lighting, the background color and everything. And you were like, great, let's do it. And they turned out exactly how I wanted them to.
Yay, I'm so happy. I mean, I love specificity. And, you know, I was on your podcast before the break, and I talked a lot about headshots on that episode. And, you know, it's so funny because it's like I'm constantly, as an artist, you know, because a lot of people up until still think like, you know, headshots for me is like a side gig. I'm like, no, it's you know, we're on Dear Multi-Hyphenate, so we're going to talk more about multi-hyphenating, but it's very much it's very much of who I am as an artist, just as much as acting is, just as much as, you know, producing is, just as much as whatever is. And you know, I have a very clear differentiation between like a side gig or a side hustle as opposed to like a multi-hyphenate proficiency. Photography has helped me stay relevant in this industry, and it's helped me, you know, book performance gigs, and it's helped me book my, you know, it's helped me get my managers and friends and so many. It's more than just like this thing that I picked up a few years ago. It's very much become an extension of who I am and how I express myself, and how I've been
huge networking tool.
Yeah, and how I've been able to sort of like, you know, put my stamp on the industry, because I think actors, you know, I am an actor and I love actors, and I feel that actors, you know, since I've been able to work with them in this way, have been able to open themselves up to more artistic possibilities, art in the places that they don't think art exists, like in headshots. Headshots for me is just simply an extension of yourself as an actor. There's a camera in front of you. What do you do if there's a camera in front of you? You act. The only reason why it's harder is because no one gave you a script. Problem is that since this is a business tool, you have to be ultra specific about it. You're not really playing a character, but you are sharing an essence of yourself. And I think the best way to get essences of yourself and to really drop in is to focus on a story that you're telling. And that's why I want clients to really bring in a song. Just say the lyrics, a monologue. Say the monologue.
One, I love that.
You know, one, like, just to get you into the moment and really focus on the breath. When an actor is able to do that in the studio, that is when I become a director and I'm able to go, great, I love that. I want more of that, less of this. Let's do that. Use that breath. And it becomes an artistic experience. And then all of a sudden you have 250 frames of this look that is fleshed out. And that to me is what I love about headshot photography. We want casting directors to lean forward and go, I want to see who this person is in the room. And how do you do that? You lean into your art. Simple as that for me.
Yeah. And as an actor on the other side of the camera, I think for headshots, it's important to know, okay, what are the things I'm going in for? What do I want to go in for? And have a little flavor of that, so that when, you know, they have since are not on anymore, obviously, but like when you're casting Maisel or you're casting Succession, those shows, people dress a certain way, there's a certain cinematography to it, there's a style. So if you give just like a tiny essence of either of those shows in your headshots, if that's something that you want to be on, or you're already starting to kind of go in, it makes the casting director, it makes you look like you already exist in that world, which makes it easier for them to bring you in.
Like, exactly.
Oh, that person, oh, these headshots, not that they look, you know, like period pieces or anything, but like, it's just a little something where they're trying to cast a world. And if it looks even a hair like you belong in that world via your headshots, I think it helps casting, which then helps bring you into the room.
You know, and there's casting directors are so busy, you know, there's so much going on, so that if you sort of give them a photo that isn't in costume, it's not, you know, hokey or anything like that, but it just is a taste of the world of which they're casting, then you have a much better chance of being brought in. You know, if you have a big, smiley, bubbly photo and you want to get seen for Succession, I don't know if you are setting yourself right up for success. But if you want to get scenes for Succession, you're going to need that sort of dark, dark, cinematic, more serious shot suits those sorts of photos, the Aaron Sorkin pieces, you know, stuff like that.
Yep.
You know, for things like Maisel and you know, a few years ago, we used to just differentiate commercial and theatrical, commercial sort of being really only
commercials, or at least people thought that. But what's great about, you know, a commercial shot now is that so many things in the industry are commercial. So, you know, they're selling something and, you know, it's about a widespread audience and reaching millions and millions and millions of people. That a commercial photo now works, commercial photo in quotes, now works for so many different TV shows, now works for so many Broadway shows. So,
yeah,
you know, it's sort of getting more bang for your buck, which is really awesome. But, you know, headshots really are important. They're, you know, I think some people think they just need a photo of them, but really what they need is a clear representation of them. It's more than just a photo. It's a clear representation of them. And headshots are a really great example of that.
And I mean, I've heard it from the horse's mouth several times. When something goes out, casting offices are getting hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of submissions.
Thousands.
For it might not even be the guest star. It might be a one or two line co-star.
Thousands.
And so all they don't have time, obviously, to like go through your reel and your website and like your whole package. There's literally not time for that. All there is a sea of headshots, and that is quite literally what gets you the appointment is your headshot. It's the calling card. It's yeah.
And they're that big.
If you've ever
seen
a casting director physically go through this, I mean, it's an ocean of headshots. And the only thing that initially brings you in is your headshot. It's truly your calling card. After that, sure, you know, if it's like down to the wire and they're like, you know what, why don't we see what he or she looks like on camera, and then they'll go to your reel or they'll, you know, look for extra supplementary material. But initially off the bat, what gets you that audition is your headshot. So it is beyond important that all of your headshots are the best package that you can possibly put forward. And yeah. Again, it's having that in your mind. What do I want to be on? What am I always and kind of leaning into that so that you look like you belong in the worlds that you want to?
There is no time. I mean, you know, I love opening up a headshot workshop with, you know, young people, I mean, people that haven't graduated college yet or just graduated, and I go, how many people are auditioning? When you're submitting for a role, how many people do you think have submitted alongside you? And they'll be like 50, 100, 750. I'm like, how about before the pandemic, it was 6,000. And now after the pandemic, it's about 7,500 for one role. And, you know, forget about the breakdowns that are like,
that's one role.
Right. And forget
and
about
that week on Law and Order, they might have 12 to do.
and forget about the breakdowns that are like looking for all ethnicities, all genders, all body right. types, all ages. Then right. that's a lot more. So you really want to, when your headshot then becomes this big on the computer screen, you really, mm-hmm. really, really want. And it's not a pressure. That's why, here we go. That's why I am of the school of thought, when you are a actor starting out, when you are a developmental actor, and developmental actors,
I love that developmental actor.
Which I've been, you know, I feel like many of us, even with 1, 2, 3 Broadway credits under our belt, are still developmental actors. You know, I was, who did I talk to about that phrase, and I was like, that's an interesting phrase and an interesting perspective. But you know, when you're still working on who you are as an actor and figuring out those projects and those stories, and you're getting in, you're getting seen more, and you're getting callbacks, or maybe you're booking those under fives or co-stars or whatever, you know, I feel that the best thing to do is do what you know. And we have to look at it this way. mathematicians do math. Earth science majors deal with earth science. Actors, I don't think when they are starting out, should be different from that. I think we have innate stories built in us. We have experience. We have a certain humor. We have a certain empathy. We have a certain look. Knowing your superpower right off the gate and knowing what you sell is going to set you up for way more success than trying to go into rooms that are not built for you or built for you yet. Dreams are different than reality, right? Not saying that you can't have goals and dreams and build to that one day, but if you see a breakdown and it literally matches who you are, lean into that. Lean into that. Not a breakdown that is like, I'm not a tapper. I'm not 6'4". I'm not really an ensemble person, but oh, that would be a dream to have. I would love that. To me, that is a waste of time. To me, that what happens then is you build all of this momentum that is not going to go anywhere, because in a business setting, you are not the answer to their problems. But on the breakdown that you do match, you are. Focus on those breakdowns. You will see more happen for you. Transformative acting, I think it's really interesting. I don't think casting directors trust actors with transformative acting or innovative roles or new and innovative roles until they're like, they've trusted them, right? Until there's like, yeah. Oh, we've seen them do those under fives. We've seen them do those co-stars. We've seen them do those shorts. We've seen them on that Broadway stage. And then they start to do the more, you know, the bigger work, the heavy hitting work, the above the title work. It's very rare that happens right out of college or right when you get to the city. It happens, but I don't think it is a very lucrative way. It's not a very lucrative business model. If you want to find success in the industry, I think there are other ways.
You know, it's funny what you were saying about like trust and things that a casting director is going to bring you in for. I can't tell you how many times I will get called in for a major network show and when I look at the breakdown, I'm like, why am I being called in for this? Like, none of this reads me in any regard. And like pre-pandemic, when you used to like go into the casting office, I'd always be like, I'm this little, not little, but like this strange villainy kind of role is like really fun and I'm gonna like have fun with it and lean into it. But I just, it's like a physical, I'm like, why am I being called in for this? And then I'll walk out of the room and I'll see five guys there who look exactly like what the breakdown says. And I'm like the odd man out, like kind of wild card, but they've also, it's an office that's seen me a gazillion times.
So they know what you look like.
Yeah. They also, you know, like what you said, there's a trust there. It's like, oh, maybe Adam can do that. Like, let's bring him in for that. Even though I read the breakdown, I'm like, in no world do I look like this role in any regard. I'm not this guy. I'll go in for it and I'll have fun with it and show them what I can do. And hopefully they go, oh, see, you know, like whether I get it or not, it's seeing another side of me. And it's for like really character-y villain, this one show that I'm talking about, very character-y villain type stuff. And they might go, that was cool. We haven't like seen that side. And it sort of adds to your – what they've seen of you, and it adds to their trust of you and what they'll bring you in for later. Because I kind of go into auditions with, yeah, I might not get this, but I want to get the next audition with this office, you know. So if I do something today that they like, then they'll bring me in again, and you start building a relationship and a trust with an office.
And I think there's a very clear differentiation between like when an actor is starting out and they're trying to get into those rooms that don't match who they are versus a casting director being like, you know what? Let's see Adam for this. Let's see Michael for this. Because I feel like they could bring in something. It's going against type. It's going against what the breakdown says. But I want to see what they want to do. And that's sort of the difficult thing about the industry is like, what I love is when my managers, you know, get me appointments and I look at the breakdown, I really try to figure out what of the breakdown matches, you know, my manager's pitches, because, you know, my managers have a pitch that, you know, that they've shown me and I've approved or, you know, whatever. I've looked it over and I love it. It's amazing. And seeing what in that pitch matches the breakdowns that I'm getting in for, right? Mm-hmm. And I love that. And but also what I love as being an actor is being able to say no, is saying, you know, like this is either going to, you know, stretch me. There's a difference, right? Between stretching myself as an actor, being what you were saying before of the like, I'm gonna go in and give it my all and have fun with it, and then being outside of your comfort zone. Like I was brought in for, I did a self-tape for a musical on Broadway that I think I said yes, just because I was like, you know what? I'm going to do my best version of this, but I don't want this project. Like I don't want to be in this show. I don't want this to be my Broadway debut. And I know that that sounds crazy, but This is a business. Listeners, this is a business. I think there is this mindset, and please talk on this. I think there's this mindset that if you are given an opportunity as an actor, you have to be grateful for it and you have to take it and you have to, you know, you have to, you know, bow down and no, this is our business and we are absolutely entitled to being able to be seen in a certain way, to have agency, and to be able to create a career that we want. Like, it's not like, of course, when I have the opportunity to audition, I am so thankful to audition. I'm so thankful for that and thankful that someone wants to see me for that. I do not take that lightly. But just because I get that appointment does not mean I have to go in for it. Because think about it, right? Like I have my photography business and I make a certain amount with my photography. I can't leave for a regional gig unless it checks off A, B, C, D, E, F, G for 2 to 3 months when I'm making in a week what I make in half of a day.
Yep.
I can't do that. I can't do that to my family.
Like regional versus TV, what you make in one day of TV is equal, if not a hair more than what you would make in a week on the road or, you know, doing something regionally.
And this is also
if you're doing it regionally, then or if you're on tour or whatever, then you're not really able to audition because you can't come back to New York and do that while you're. So it's like, if you're going to do that gig, that's what you're doing for that amount of time. And you can't really do anything else.
And that's okay. Like if you want to do that, that is okay. And I support you 100%. Of course, like there are so many wonderful actors that are going from gig to gig to gig doing that and nailing it. And they get on Broadway in a year or two because they've built up that stamina. They've built out that resume. That is amazing. But where certain people are in their lives, I'm one of them. I have to be very specific about what I say yes to. Like my husband and I booked a film over the summer. Our managers pitched us together for this for, and it's a major motion picture, which is really, really cool. And they pitched us together for this couple role, which was awesome. It was a couple role, and they pitched us together, and we wound up booking it just from the self tape, which was really, really cool. And thank you so much. And so we filmed over the summer, which was awesome. But, you know, we still, even though the gig was incredible, we still had to have a conversation, because that week we had a whole trip planned to go see Joni Mitchell in Washington at the Gorge, do her, you know, concert, her first concert in 30 years, whatever. My husband is a massive Joni Mitchell fan, and that was like a huge trip that he was looking forward to. But you know what they say, if you want to book a trip.
yep.
You know, so when our team like presented us with that, you know, we had to, even before, I think before the self tape, we were like, all right, let's just do it. Probably not going to get it. Let's just do it. Get on their radar, do a good self tape, because we could do this. And then we got a call the next day from our manager saying, hey, you booked it.
The next day.
Cause we were filming the next week.
Holy shit.
Isn't that wild? It was wild.
People have no idea. There are things that happen in this industry, in this life. It's just so crazy. So crazy.
I know. And, you know, things that happen in an hour. It's like you never know when you get that phone call. You know, you never know when you get the phone call being like, hey, we actually need you to show up in an hour at the studio. This person dropped out and the creative team is waiting for you. That happens all the time.
Sometimes it's 2 weeks later and you're like, what role?
Right.
That thing you did 3 weeks ago. And I'm like, what were the size? Like, I've maybe done 5, 6, 7 auditions since then. And it's like, 3 weeks ago, what the hell show was, you know, it might be something that's not on yet, or, you know, and you're like, what did I book? Oh, right. Oh, cool. Okay, sweet. You know, it's sometimes the timing is so bizarre. So many things I've booked, it's been like 2 weeks after the fact. And you're like, what was that? Yeah.
I really also have a very specific, I'm going to tell everyone honestly, when it comes to self-tapes. Okay. And some like casting director, an agent, a manager can listen to this and be like, absolutely not. Do not listen to this person. But what I will tell you
is that I'm so curious.
Every time I do it, I get a callback director session, or I've booked it. And I really strongly believe in filming your self-tape as if you are filming it in the world of which they're casting, just like your headshot. If you are in a living room or dining room, film it in a living room or dining room. Give yourself that environment. Create the environment. If it is outside, do it outside. Lean into it. Tell the story. Make them go, oh, that's what we're looking for. Because they have to see it. They have to see it. And I think even in the self-tapes where they are like, we want this against a clean backdrop.
And has anyone ever said anything?
Not a single soul.
Huh.
What they've said is that, oh, we want you to go into the director session. The first.
Right. You're probably also, Michael, the only one who is doing that. Yeah. So
maybe I shouldn't be talking about this.
The best kept secret in casting.
This is the thing about it.
It stands out like crazy, right? Because everyone's going to be on a blue wall and
I think what they're so worried about
sitting
is
at a table.
Right.
In a dining room.
Right. And giving myself things to do and like tell the story. Right. And it creates humor and it goes, oh, this guy, he can play, he can do. And what's so interesting about it is I think what it really is trying to say is like, we don't want you to go above and we don't want you to spend any money on this. We don't want I think initially it probably is in that to protect the actor, right? We want you to focus on the text. We want you to focus on the work. We don't want you to have to freak out and create something. Like just against a backdrop will do. But I think because I have an eye and I'm a headshot photographer and I understand like how to not make a backdrop look distracting and make it help what is helping the text or the actor intention, I think I can create something that feels, you know, part of the story as opposed to like, where is he? Oh, wow. I like what's on the wall over there. The scene one. Right. You know what I mean? What sort of risks have you taken in auditions that you've seen pay off?
Not like every time, certainly, but just having, if you're going to make, I don't even want to use the word bold, but like a bold choice or, you know, a kind of, use like a bit of a voice that's not how you personally speak, but doing it with confidence and not like, I think this is what they like, or you know, like you're not trying to impress. It's, I'm reading this, this is how I interpret it, I think this person would kind of sound like this, and that's what I'm going to do, and I'm going to do it confidently and not make it distracting, but you just sort of, you make it sound like that character and not necessarily me. But there's times I've put on like a character-y, cool little voice that's, you know, also kind of maybe serves the world and the character that I'm being brought in for, whatever. But yeah, doing it confidently as though, oh yeah, that's what that person sounds like, yeah, of course, you know. And again, you have to always be conscious of what's the show, what's the film, what is the world that this is. Is this comedy? Is this something where, yeah, we're, that's not where this belongs. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's that kind of, you have to be aware of what it is you're going in for and what would be appropriate and what would fit. And yeah, just do, if you're gonna do something that's different than you, whether it's physically, how you speak, how you do it, confidently, as though that's what they're gonna ask for, that's mm-hmm. what this person sounds like, that's what this person looks like, you know, whatever it may be. But yeah,
preparation is, you know, solid preparation is what you're talking about. And solid preparation, it is like, I hate to say this because I think as a whole, especially with TikTok and stuff like that, I think care of acting is really sort of going away. And I think we're a sort of praising performances that are vocally stimulating, and there's nothing behind the eyes and no intention and there's no storytelling. And while vocally stimulating is beautiful, when I go see a show, a musical, I want to see acting that is really, really fleshed out, really cared for. You know, so it's weird that I'm saying this, but you know, I think preparation for an audition is almost like a risk, because at the height of, you know, when you get the most auditions that you have in a year, if you're lucky to get them, if you have the right team to pitch you and the right headshots and the right materials and stuff like that, and you were trying to figure out your income and you're trying to deal with this and you have family stuff and you have all that, preparation is almost risky just because of the time that it takes. And also the financial obligations. Like if you're doing an accent, like you should get coached on that. That's $100 for the hour. If you were, you know, going over this role and it's a little vocally challenging, and you need to get a voice lesson, that's $200 for the hour. Like, auditions are expensive. Like, the right preparations for auditions are expensive, and therefore it can be risky because, like, you are spent, they're expensive and in both time and finances. And it's so weird to say that preparation is risk when the job is so few and far between.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
And that's why, honestly, one of the reasons I always say I love self-tapes in the post-pandemic world is because I remember before the pandemic, you had sometimes like less than 24 hours to go in for a major film opposite a fucking Oscar-winning actor with three solid pages playing a real-life character. I'm talking about the movie Jackie. And like, they brought me in, and it was like, it was at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and they wanted to see me at 11 a.m. the next day.
Yeah, I mean...
like, I'm still trying to get off book before I even, like...
And off your shift.
Prepare. Well, yeah, I do lights and sound at a cabaret club in Midtown, and I had two shows that night. I had to give one of them away because I was like, I had to get it covered because I was like, I have to memorize all this before I even like start, you know, working on it. It's a real person doing a little bit of research. What does this person sound like? Finding recordings on YouTube of this. Like, and now post-pandemic, they'll be like, you know, it'll be like a Monday morning. They'll be like, anytime, but before Thursday at 4. And you're like, oh my God, I have all, to me, that's like all the time in the world to prepare. And sometimes it's one line and sometimes it's six scenes over 15 pages. You know, sometimes they give you a week depending on what it is. But I feel like there's just so much more prep time with self-tapes, and I love that because then when I'm at home and I do the tape, I've been having the lines in my head for days. I feel so comfortable, whereas, you know, going into the office, it's like, well, you guys just gave this to me 24 hours ago and it's a huge scene, so it's not that I'm nervous because of, you know, I'm in like a casting session. It's my brain still hasn't like sat with the words long enough, you know, and I just feel like self-tape, they've given us so much more time, which makes me so much more at ease, more comfortable. And then outside of just learning the words, I have like all this time to play and explore and do, you know, whatever prep I want to, or, you know, work on little things that otherwise I, you know, pre-pandemic just a lot of times would not have had time for. That's why a lot of people hate self-tapes. I fucking love them because I have found we as actors get so much more time to prepare. And that's such a gift, such an asset to the tape when you actually do it, you know? Because if you want to see someone for a role, why would you want to see them still, you know, working out the words, you know, 20 hours after giving them the sides. If I was a casting director, I want to see someone calm, present, prepared, not a nervous wreck because they just got the words. It's pages long.
Pre-pandemic, there was this like very, very clear boundary. And now I think
one of our favorite, those are some of our favorite people to have on before the break, because you kind of get to pull back the curtain. And, you know, when you're an actor and you're talking with your tribe of fellow artists and actors, you always talk about, you know, I've always wanted to ask a casting director, like, you know, I wonder if, and so like having them on the show, we get to be like, okay, this is just my question. What, it, you know, and you get really honest answers that are amazing and informative. And so getting to have a really wonderful, candid chat about the industry, not like you're just talking to them and you're like, you know, and then I'll work in this little question about casting, but to just have a whole hour to talk about what they do and the process. And it's really wonderful.
And if anyone listening has the opportunity to sit behind a table, do it. Like, be a reader. If you can assist your friend casting their short film, you will see how much actually doesn't matter. How much you will realize, how much it doesn't matter. You know, and that the people behind the table actually really do want you to succeed and do well. There have definitely been rooms where I'm like, oh, you don't give, why did you call me in? There's like, there was this one project.
They're rooting for you.
Right. There was one project where I was called in for an appointment through my rep. This was years ago. Not a single person looked up from the table. And I was just like, who are you setting? Like, what is, like, I now I probably would do something like, I'll wait I'll wait.
I love that.
I probably would, because like,
are we all ready?
Yeah, we all ready?
They're like,
I'll wait, because it's like, okay, I did not just cancel my whole day to come down from wherever I was, be in this room with you after all of this prep, and not even have you look at me.
Right.
Yep. I just think on a human level, I don't fucking care about the gig. On a human level, that's rude. If you're doing that to me, you're doing that to other people. Don't fucking do it. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry. If you're going to come into my space, I'm going to look at you. I do it every day as a headshot photographer. You can do it as a casting director.
I love that.
I just, on a human level, you know, like, I don't know. I just find that to be like, so like, in a different world, in like the 40s, 50s, 60s, you know, kid, you'll never make it. Like, we're not there anymore. Like, I just, I don't know. I don't find that to be very helpful. But
totally,
you know, I have found a new confidence since the pandemic. I think, you know, I'm a COVID long hauler, and I was really sick, and I'm dealing with a lot of post COVID shit. I can go into a room and tell a story and be like, here's what I prepared. And the in-person, like the self tapes have been cool, but the in-person projects that I've gone in for have been really awesome. And I really love preparing for them. You know, like, I think two of them have been in Yiddish. It's helped me learn some more Yiddish. It's helped me, you know, dive into that aspect of who I am. And now I walk into a room and I'm not my goal isn't to book the job anymore. My goal is to just tell the story and have fun. And
you can't be worried about that. It's not in your control.
Yeah, it's not. And I get great feedback. I haven't booked anything from being in person yet, but it just also, it just feels better. And I think I was having a really hard time before the pandemic going into a room in person. And I think, one, it was because I was in a lot of the wrong rooms. I was
in what regard?
In the way that I'm sort of talking about in the beginning, where I was like, I shouldn't be telling this story.
Got it.
You know, yeah. And not in a, oh, Michael, don't be hard on yourself. You would be so, no, First of all, I don't think I want to tell this story. I'm just auditioning. I'm just in this room so I can, you know, book my Broadway show everyone be jealous, all my classmates be jealous of me and say that I told you so I could be on Broadway and have all the things that come with Broadway and whatever. I think that was me pre-pandemic. So I was putting all this pressure on myself as opposed to walking into a space where I'm like, I'm setting myself up for success. I know this humor is mine. Mm-hmm. This is not what I do well. These notes, this style, not what I do well. I shouldn't be in this room, but this style. And literally what happens, Adam, is when I walk into rooms that I'm like, this is who I am, I get callbacks for them. Mm-hmm. I get good feedback, you know? So I really just think knowing who you are and walking into the rooms where you're like, I can tell this story really confidently. I think that helps. And now I do that. And I just like, I have more fun with it. I don't stress myself out anymore.
Totally. And even to piggyback on that with what you asked me earlier about, you know, like risks or something, you have to also remember they're going to be seeing a lot of people. So if there's something you can do and do it with confidence that maybe they won't be seeing other people do, right? You're like, if it's in the voice or it's something that just sort of differentiates you from, you know, the 15, 20 other guys that they're going to see, and they can go, oh, that was different. That's why, like, with self-tapes, here's another reason why I absolutely love all of the self-tape stuff. We as actors are so not in control of so many things, but with self-tapes, I, the actor, am the one sending my tapes, and there's nothing that ever says do only send one take, because usually when you go into a room, into the office, you know, if you're lucky, you get to do it two or three times, and you might give something a little different on the third one. And so I usually try to, and now look, I'm not going to send them like six takes of a scene, but if I have two, if it's a big enough role and I have like two or three different ones, we're not in the room. We can't have those conversations of trying something different or getting direction. So I just sort of think of it as like, all right, what are little shifts and variations that I can do from one take to another that just sort of show different colors to this thing, just as a little bit of variety. Because when you're in the room, usually like my favorite casting offices, it's like you go in, they just want to see what you have prepared. Mm-hmm. And then they go, cool, what if, or how about we think about, or, and they give you a little direction and you go, that has now changed it for me. And on take two, it's now become a little bit of a different thing. So I, at home, try to do that. And I'll send, depending on the scene, obviously, and the character, two or three things that are just a little bit different one-to-one. Mm-hmm. So they can watch my tapes and go, that's interesting. We've now seen Adam do it two or three different colors of this scene, a little bit of variety, as opposed to just cut and dry, black and white. This is the one take, and that's probably how everyone might interpret it, you know? Just so it gives you a little bit more color, you stand out a little bit more, and you give them a little bit more variation on what they're going to be watching a ton of tapes of.
It just gives you more chances. That's all. Do what you can without crossing boundaries.
Completely.
Yes. Do what you can to be seen and to be heard and to be considered as an actor.
Yeah, and again, we have control over that. That's an amazing thing, because there's so much we don't have control of, that I am in charge of what they see of me. This role.
It's creativity and control. Yep. That's I think the special equation of being a business savvy actor or artist is creativity and control. So, you know, you're on a business podcast called Dear Multi-Hyphenate, and I think for me, part of my confidence when I go into a room is because of my multi-hyphenate identity, right? Like, I walk into a room and I'm like, I'm going to give this material, but I also have clients waiting for me, and I'm going to be able to work with them. And I also have a project that I'm producing, and I also have, you know, these things and all, whatever. There's that sort of like, I don't need approval of booking this show to convince me that I am an artist. I have done all of these things already. So how do you identify as a multi-hyphenate? First of all, what is a multi-hyphenate to you?
I think just someone who doesn't, who's in more than one lane. You know, it's in business terms, I guess, kind of diversifying your portfolio of what you do. Like, and that can be many, many, many things. This industry, there's so many things to do. But yeah, just someone who's not simply defined by one aspect of the industry, but maybe has their foot in several things that they do.
So how do you identify as a multi-hyphenate? What are your proficiencies? You're an actor and...
I've written and directed two shorts that have done very well on the film festival circuit. My last film, Skeletons, amidst the pandemic, which film festivals and the pandemic was a whole crazy experience. But
how so?
Well, just being in person and the programming and screenings, and, you know, I think film festivals are like also big social events, and when you're in the middle of a pandemic, that kind of changed, and they kind of leaned into like hybrid stuff as to sort of like also add more projects. So for a while there were no in-person screenings, which at film festivals, it's like how you network and you meet people and you watch other people's films, and afterwards, you know, you all hang out, or there's functions as part of a film festival. It's like this big social thing, and you take all that out, and it's like it was very different. And so there was a lot of online and virtual screenings. And then things kind of became hybrid, where it was like a little bit of in-person, a little bit of virtual, as things like slowly started to come back. So it was very different than the norm. But, you know, my last short, Skeletons, we luckily got to screen in person like 9 times.
Wow.
We got into 2 Oscar qualifying film festivals, which was incredible. So I've written and directed 2 shorts, and my side hustle between everything that I've had for a gazillion years, I run and design lights and sound at a theater in Midtown. I did stand-in work for a really long time on a show. Just sort of having your foot in a bunch of different doors within the industry. And really, when you do that, it's quite incredible just the amount of people you're going to meet. Not just for networking, but, you know, in general. But, you know, also helps with networking. But yeah, so I have the podcast Before the Break, doing lights and sound, have done stand-in work, writing and directing short films, acting.
You're existing as an artist in the industry with all of your proficiencies. Like, that's the amazing thing about it, right? Is that there's a cross-pollination. And that's what I think multi-hyphenates, that's what I think differentiate a multi-hyphenate from someone that's multi-talented or multifaceted. Like, multi-hyphenates cross-pollinate, like the whole, you know, film festival thing. Like, how does that make you, by producing, how does that make you a better actor? In so many ways, you know, there's cross-pollination there. Just because you're not an actor for that project, or maybe you were, but
I was in my first short film, and that was an interesting, you know, having to be on both sides of the camera simultaneously.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like the cross-pollination, the using your talents to tell a story and garner income and create an audience and a paper trail, and because you love it. Those are all things that check off the boxes for being a multi-hyphenate. I think so many people think just because they have all of these talents makes them a multi-hyphenate. It's, I think there's a differentiation. I think, you know, everyone in the world is has the potential to, I think, is multi-talented and has the potential to be a multi-hyphenate. Just the idea of it is just creating this world of how your art and your hyphens and proficiencies and talents all help each other. That's the thing, because I think when you're multi-talented and sort of like picking and choosing, it can get confusing. It can get, you know, your workflow can be off and you can stress yourself out and market yourself as too much. But when you include how everything helps each other and you shape it into an artistic persona, that's when I think you protect yourself as an artist, but you also are open to so many possibilities and you see that there's actually control there. There's the creativity and the control. When you're just sort of multi-talented, I feel like there's no structure, there's no control there. But as soon as you have that cross-pollination, right, there comes the control.
Well, I think the difference is, like, you can be multi-talented. That doesn't mean you're doing something with those talents.
I know plenty of multi-talented people that are not doing a single thing.
Exactly.
And it breaks my heart. Breaks my heart. And sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
What were you gonna say? No.
I just say, I think it breaks my heart because I'm like, that, like, the people that are busting their ass, multi-hyphenates, creatives who are owning their own small businesses and, you know, things like that, there has to be differentiation between the people that are self-motivated and the people that are not motivated.
And look, a lot of it, you know, mounting projects from nothing, from scratch and create it, it's hard.
Yeah.
I know, like, you know, producing a short in the middle of the friggin' pandemic, you know, that was a challenge. And all of the challenges that, you know, SAG sort of wrote that new book on how we press forward, and then taking all of those things and implementing it onto, you know, a set was a challenge, but we did it. And, you know, I don't know. I think being a multi-hyphenate is doing something about it and having those things under your belt, not just I'm talented at something and, you know, you don't do anything about it.
So what's the future for you as multi-hyphenate? How do you, what do you want to keep doing? What can you change? What can you work on? How can you keep being the best multi-hyphenate you can be?
Well, again, creating something out of, you know, and producing and, you know, making film is not easy. It's very expensive. It's it's a lot. And while I do sort of have an idea on my mind that I've been mulling around for quite a while, I haven't sat down to write it. But I'm one of those people. How do I say this? If I'm gonna initiate a project, I'm not one to start and stop and put it on the back burner and like, well, I wrote it. One day I'll get to like, if the train's gonna leave the station, mm-hmm. we're gonna arrive at the destination.
Yeah, on time.
Which is also to say, if I start writing something, I will immediately go into contacting, you know, thinking about casting, going back to my producers and my editor, you know, and getting like the team back together and be like, all right, I think we're gonna like leave the station again and like make something, you know. I'm like not one to, oh yeah, I wrote something a year and a half ago and I just haven't, you know, gotten around to producing it, because that's like the fun part. I want right. to make it. I mean, it's obviously stressful as hell, and getting thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars together is incredibly, it's an odd thing, and it's incredibly stressful. But if I'm going to start something, I'm going to finish it. So it's like, if I start writing it, I kind of have to put my mindset in like, all right, if I start this within the next year, this might be like in the can and completed. And that's quite a marathon to start running. So I think that's kind of why I've been like, you know, if I really like nail down this idea and start writing it, I'm gonna wanna immediately shoot it. And so I think that's sort of what's not holding me back, but I've done it twice, like year after year. Mm-hmm. Lost and Found and Skeletons were like back to back. And I remember raising money for Skeletons, and it was basically exactly 1 year after doing the same for Lost and Found, and thinking, I can't believe I'm doing this 1 year later again, trying to raise money like in the summer of 2020 in the pandemic. It was just like, holy shit, I can't believe we're doing this again so quickly. But yeah, so
what you're saying is when you want to press go, you have to be able to make sure that you are going to press go.
Yeah.
Because there's no coming. When that train leaves the station, they're not going back in reverse. They're not.
Yeah.
It's an express train. It is going from 145th to 125 to 59th Street. Like, it is express. And I'm sort of the same way. You know, like, when I'm committed to something, I'm committed to something.
Yeah.
Unless there is a, you know, something that disbands a group or, you know, puts a project on hiatus for whatever reason or shelves, you know, there are things totally. That are not in our control. But when if it were up to me, we're doing it. We're going. We're figuring it out. We'll tackle on those problems as we go, and we're going to get a finished product.
Totally. Yeah, I'm not a wishy-washy kind of guy in that way. It's like, if I'm going to do something, we're going to do it. And I want to do it, but I've done it twice now, so I'm aware of the immense process that it is and how insanely time consuming and stressful, although also incredibly fun, incredibly fulfilling. Love all of the process of it, but once it starts, it's not going to stop. And then I guess as an actor going into this new year, I'm just stoked as hell that the strikes are over and we can kind of get back to auditions. It was so bizarre. It felt like the pandemic all over again.
I know.
It was except weird. That everyone else was going about their lives, and that wasn't really, you know what I mean? Like, the pandemic was like a global singular event that we all went through. So it was like, well, of course entertainment is on hiatus. The world is on hiatus.
Right.
But with the strikes, it was like, shit, the world has started spinning again, and now we're kind of like not doing our thing. And so, you know, for like the 9 months or whatever that it was just no auditions was so bizarre. So now that all of that is over, I'm so excited to get back into all that. And, you know, I have my goals for this year in terms of acting. And I hope it's a really great year, and I'm excited to get back into it.
Adam DiCarlo will be. Thank you so much for coming into Multi-Hyphenate and talking with me.
Michael Kushner, thank you so much for having me.
Where can
this
we find you?
A great chat.
Of course. Where can we find you on social media?
You can find me on, I don't really use Twitter or X or whatever the hell it's called anymore. Mostly just Instagram. You can find me at that Adam DiCarlo. You can follow our podcast Before the Break at Before the Break Pod, and you can listen to it wherever you get your podcasts. It's basically about the hustle before actors' big break. Like, how did you get your reps? How did you get your union card? What was the whole journey to being an actor that we all know and love now? And the impetus was sort of like, I wish I had this as a resource 10 or 12 years ago when I was starting out, when you're kind of like, how do you do this?
It. Yeah.
Like, what's the, not that there is a process, quote unquote, but like, what did other people do to like get going? And we have like 115 episodes. We're coming on our third year. We have SAG Award winners, Tony Award winners, Broadway stars, leads on television, people. We have all kinds of people. We have industry professionals. We've had you on, which have been some of our most popular episodes, with agents, managers, casting directors, headshot photographers, an intimacy coordinator, all kinds of awesome industry guests. So you can sort of like peek behind the curtain and have a conversation with them. So we've been on a little bit of a hiatus, but we'll be back in 2024. And really, wherever you find podcasts, you can find Before the Break.
Well, everyone listen up Before the Break. And also with Dear Multi-Hyphenate, follow on Instagram at the Michael Kushner or at Dear Multi-Hyphenate, and rate, subscribe, comment, do all that good stuff, specifically on Apple Podcasts. That's pretty good. And tell your friends, your family. And thank you, Adam, for being here. And happy 2024 to you.
Happy New Year. I think today is like the last day we can say that.
Okay, last day.
It's the 8th of January. I think after today, everyone's going to be like, that was
so last week.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Adam.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.